It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network. Coming up in our series of candidate interviews, we'll talk with Margaret Engebretson. She's a Democrat running for the seat in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. First, the U.S. Commerce Department released its latest report on the country's gross domestic product today, and it's got good news about the economy. Economic growth beat out expectations again, with the economy growing 3.5% in the third quarter. But the stock market doesn't seem to be overjoyed by the news, and some other indicators are mixed when it comes to the nation's economic future. Akani Otani covers the stock market for the Wall Street Journal. Akani, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
We've got this 3% growth in the GDP. First of all, give us a little 101. What does the GDP actually measure?
So this is gross domestic product. We're really measuring all economic activity across the U.S., so it takes into account things like consumer spending, spending among businesses, and also, of course, spending by the government. And we see that a lot of these areas did contribute to the numbers that we saw for the third quarter, which is the fastest pace of growth since 2014. In particular, consumers were another area of strength again. And we also saw business investment, government spending contribute to the growth rate that we saw in 2018.
And this is two good back-to-back quarters, again, as I understand it, the best back-to-back GDP quarters since 2014. How good a news do economists see this being for the U.S. economy?
So it's sort of two-sided. On the one hand, I think a lot of people are excited about the figures that we saw today because they do confirm that we're still seeing momentum in the economy, which, of course, has been expanding for almost 10 years at this point, so the second longest expansion in U.S. history. But on the other hand, I think a lot of folks these days, especially when it comes to markets and the economy, are looking forward and trying to get a sense of how much longer this kind of momentum can keep up for. And I think there we have a little bit more murkiness. I think economists are widely expecting this growth to slow down in 2019 and definitely in 2020 as well. So I think there's a little bit of optimism, but folks are still nervous about what the future holds.
Are there concrete things that people are looking at and saying, okay, this is a tea leaf, or maybe better than a tea leaf, an indicator that says, yeah, maybe there's a slowdown around the corner?
Definitely. And I think the first one that comes to mind is housing, where we've seen existing home sales slump for four consecutive months at this point, which is sort of amazing when you think about how strong the broader economy looks like and how high measures of consumer confidence have been tracking in. It seems like this should be an area where we're still seeing strength, but economists keep saying that rising mortgage rates have really started to take a toll on homeowners' ability to, to sell their homes, and for renters who are hoping to buy new homes, it's also hurting their affordability as well. So that's definitely an area of the economy that we've seen display more weakness in the second half of the year.
Now, the GDP, getting back to that, it's one big measure. How much does it influence what people feel when it comes to the economy? How much people are, say, getting paid, job security, things like that? Is there a direct correlation, or are people kind of insulated from it?
I mean, I guess it depends who you ask, but there's definitely a case to be made that, even though the headline numbers say that the economy is growing at the fastest pace in 4 years, that other measures have contributed to sort of a lack of corresponding optimism among folks. So wage growth, of course, has been ticking up this year, but still below the averages that we saw around 2000, 2001. And that's one area that people have been pointing to and saying could become particularly problematic as inflation continues to pick up, since it essentially is chipping away at whatever raise you get in your paychecks with things like healthcare costs going up, for instance. And then I think the other thing is that we're seeing this disconnect between the GDP numbers and the stock market, of course, which has been just tumbling throughout October. So there's definitely a sense that on one hand, we are seeing very strong broad economic data prints, but on the other, that there are sort of lagging measures that indicate that people are not necessarily as confident as they may seem on the surface.
Talking to Akani Otani from the Wall Street Journal, looking at some dueling economic numbers today. GDP looking pretty good. Stock market, huh? Kind of bouncing around. And Akani, let's talk about that now. These good GDP numbers came out in the morning, and we saw a big drop in the Dow. I'm not sure where it ended up, down for the day, though. But we're getting these charts that look kind of like, you know, an architect's plan for a roller coaster. What's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a crazy month. The U.S. stock market, by many measures, is on course for its worst month since 2008. So it's been a while since we've seen this kind of rip lower in the stock market. And yet the economy, of course, is nowhere near where it was back in 2008. So what's going on? I mean, I think there's a couple things contributing to it. You know, one is we did see a big rise in bond yields earlier in the month, and some folks said that that sort of spooked people and got them talking again about how quickly the Fed is going to have to move to keep raising interest rates and keep the economy from overheating. And that's always a dynamic that tends to sort of, raise people's concerns, just because for years when we saw bond yields trading near historic lows, stocks were sort of the obvious place to go to when you wanted yield. But that dynamic has increasingly shifted throughout this year, and so that's sort of removing one more pillar of support for the stock market. And then we've also just seen broader concerns about global growth, and some folks say that has to do with the tariffs, which of course have been hitting China particularly hard, but also just idiosyncratic concerns, whether it's things like Brexit in the UK or the Italian budget dispute with the European Union. Those things are all contributing to a dimmer outlook for global growth, which in turn does affect the sentiment of investors here.
And there's been a lot of attention to some corporate earnings reports lately for companies that make stuff. There's been concern over the impact, as you were mentioning, of tariffs on the bottom line. Some tech companies, I think there's been some mixed news. Are there particular companies that people have been watching and saying, huh, this is kind of puzzling or worrisome?
Yeah, so one of them actually, it's funny, is this company called Fastenal, which you usually don't really hear about in the news, but it basically makes tools and supplies, and it got a lot of attention over on Wall Street because it actually beat both profit and sales expectations for the third quarter, but its shares ended up tumbling because analysts were saying executives had cited rising costs related to tariffs and inflation as being a factor that sort of could hurt the results down the line. And that's the thing that people are quite sort of focused on at the moment, is how much tariffs and how much inflation is going to hurt earnings growth, not necessarily this quarter, but in the coming quarters. And then, of course, the tech companies, a couple of them have started reporting results, and people have been really focused on what they're saying because they had run up so far in the stock market in the first half of the year. And so I think the expectations were set very high heading into the earnings season. And we did see some of those companies like Amazon do quite poorly after they reported results.
And Akani, what are some of the next signs you're looking for? The GDP thing people watch for, those corporate earnings. What are the things you're watching for next to see how things are going to go in the next few weeks?
So we have one coming up Monday, actually, with core PCE prices. So that's actually the indicator that the Fed prefers to watch when it comes to tracking how inflation is moving in the economy. And we'll also get some data on consumer spending that day as well. So those two things could very well spark some more volatility in the markets because people will be really focused on whether we're seeing consumer spending, which is a major driver of economic growth, showing any signs of faltering, and also whether inflation seems to be picking up, which could force the Fed to accelerate its pace of interest rate increases. And then on the Friday, we actually also have the monthly jobs report, and that one, of course, will also be closely watched because the labor market has been a bright spot in the economy for a lot of this year, and I think any signs that that could be cooling a little bit certainly has the potential to spook investors.
Akani, thanks a lot for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
That's Akani Otani, a reporter who covers the stock market for the Wall Street Journal. She was with us to talk about some encouraging numbers out today on the economy and what to make of that while we're seeing turmoil on the stock markets. Coming up, we'll talk to Margaret Engebretson, a Democrat running for election in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. Stay with us here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, it's Food Friday. Food writer Dory Greenspan shares some delicious meals that are easy to make on a busy weekday or over a lazy weekend. First, between now and the November 6th general election, Wisconsin Public Radio has invited candidates who are running in contested races for statewide office and congressional seats to join us for interviews on Central Time and The Morning Show. You can find all those interviews at wisconsinvote.org. Margaret Engebretson joins us now. She's a veteran of the U.S. military and running as a Democrat in the race for the 7th District congressional seat in northern Wisconsin. Also running are independent Ken Dreesen and Republican incumbent Congressman Sean Duffy. Margaret Engebretson, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Well, what do you see as the most important issue facing residents of Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District?
Well, there's several issues going on in the 7th. It's a very, very large district. It's all or part of 26 counties, so different areas are experiencing different concerns. But for almost everyone I talk to, healthcare is a number one issue, and that is because of healthcare costs have gotten out of control over the years, and access to doctors and specialists is also a challenge in certain areas.
So if elected to Congress, what would be your priority when it comes to health care?
Well, I think that we need to transition to a Medicare for All public health insurance program that covers everyone from the day they're born until the day they die, so that never again does anyone have to worry about having health care coverage. And once we make this transition to a single payer system, we will be able to bring down health care costs across the entire system.
Another big issue lately is trade and tariffs, concerns about the impact of tariffs on Wisconsin producers, manufacturers, farmers, and the state's economy. What direction do you think Congress and the nation should take on trade policy?
Well, I think it's really concerning that the Trump administration has put in tariffs, huge tariffs, on certain countries, and he has used tariffs as a sledgehammer instead of a scalpel. Now, in some cases, there's going to be a need for tariffs, but the way they're being implemented now is causing a lot of unintended consequences within our economy. And as far as trade goes, for many of our trade agreements, we have had business interests well represented at the table, but we also need to bring in and take into account labor interests and environmental interests and be more thoughtful about the long-term impacts that these agreements have.
Would you like to see some of our agreements, like the agreement formerly known as NAFTA, renegotiated with those interests in mind, labor and the environment?
I definitely think we should take a look at NAFTA and who's being helped here and make sure that everyone has a voice in this. But this agreement has been in place for a very, very long time. So a lot of the damage, shall we say, to labor has already occurred. Now, it's unfortunate that we didn't do better planning ahead of time as we transition into a more global economy, but there are definitely things that we can do. And the important thing here is that we need, you know, all the stakeholders involved in making a plan, because we're all affected. And when we all do better, we all do better.
Now, immigration has been a priority for the Trump administration. It's a long-running issue in Congress where not too much has actually been resolved. What would you look for when it comes to immigration policy for the United States?
Yeah, this is a disappointment, I know, for a lot of Americans. And our Congress has gotten close several times to coming to a bipartisan solution to reform our immigration system. but we haven't been successful. And now, in the current climate with divisive politics and, you know, a lot of our elected leaders and people running for office are using it as a wedge to run their campaigns on. And it's really unethical and dishonorable in many of these cases what is being said. Now, the current immigration system does need reform. And we've seen how it really, really matters who is implementing policy in this nation. So what we need to do is address the, I think it's 11 to 12 million undocumented immigrants in this nation who are contributing to our communities. They're working, they're paying taxes, and we must provide a pathway to citizenship for those that are law-abiding and have followed the rules. The visa system has to be reformed. It's creating problems, especially here in Wisconsin, for agriculture. And we have to look at our system as a whole. And as a nation, we need to start discussing immigration policy. Like, who are we? I mean, what is America? Who do we want here? How many people are we going to welcome into our nation to become Americans? So that is going to be a long conversation where we, you know, all voices need to be heard on this. But continuing to use it as a wedge issue and a way to frighten people is just unconscionable.
Do you see yourself being able, if elected, to work across the aisle with Republicans, either in the House or with those in the Senate, to try to come up with something that all sides can agree on?
I certainly hope so. Look, I'm going to Congress to try to help make it work better, because I am not going to get there and dig in my heels and not refuse to work with people because they belong to a different party. Now, that doesn't mean that I will, you know, forsake my values and my code of honor and what I think is ethical and right. Most certainly not. That would betray my oath to my constituents and to this nation. But I would really love to work with anyone that is truly focused on progressing and getting past this point.
Talking to Margaret Engebritzen, Democrat running for Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District seat, representing much of northern and central Wisconsin. Margaret Engebritzen, let's turn now to the national debt. We saw a big jump over the last year, a rise of 17% from the previous year, despite a growing economy. How do you think Congress should tackle the annual deficit, the growing national debt?
Well, this is a situation where the Republicans in Congress pushed through this reckless tax bill without debate, without much analysis, and behind closed doors, and not working with members of the Democratic Party who are there representing millions of Americans. And they pushed it through, and many outside special interests had a hand in drafting this tax bill. And unsurprisingly, it is geared to give this huge tax windfall to the ultra-wealthy and corporations, leaving in place loopholes like the carried interest loophole. And this was exactly the wrong thing to do at the wrong time. Now, what we need to do is, in the state of the economy as it is, if we're going to deficit spend, we need to be doing it in ways that provides growth for the entire economy. So investing in infrastructure. We have many areas of this country that is desperate for infrastructure spending, much like the 7th Congressional District here in Wisconsin, education, investing in new technologies and working to transition to a clean energy economy.
Yeah, we had a caller wondering if you'd consider making incentives for individuals using solar power or other alternative energy sources. Would that be part of your goal?
Yes, that would be one piece of a holistic plan. What we need to do is reduce carbon. And you can address climate change and reducing fossil fuel consumption by taxing the use of carbon, regulating the use of carbon, and of course subsidizing research into solar, wind, and new technologies to make this transition. We've got to make this transition. The stakes are very, very high, and we are already paying massive costs for not addressing this issue in the form of increased extreme weather events, and it's even causing migration patterns around the world where people can no longer use their land for farming. I mean, this is a global issue we must address.
And can you tackle the issue for us of civility in politics, from last year's shooting of Republican congressmen at a baseball practice to this pipe bomb incident over the last week, plus a lot of heated political rhetoric? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when I launched my campaign here back February 12th of this year in Superior, where I'm at right now, I spoke about this at length in my my launch speech. It is a main reason why I'm running for Congress, is because over the years I've seen our politics degrade, our politics be corrupted by special interests and big money, and the increasing ability and willingness to use inflammatory rhetoric. And what's happened here over the years, especially since around 1994 in the Republican Newt Gingrich revolution, it is a zero-sum defeat your enemy, and looking at the other political party is not one that just disagrees with you, but that must be completely destroyed. And that has caused all kinds of issues. It has caused our Congress to come to a grinding halt. We have had our Congress shut down our government and sit there without funding to all these things we need. And the American people, I don't care what party you belong to, most Americans desperately want Congress to work better, and they want to have faith in their leaders. And what we need to do is only vote for people who are running and want to hold office for reasons to serve.
And that's all the time we have. Thanks to Margaret Engebritzen, running as a Democrat in Wisconsin's 7th Congressional District. We heard from Republican incumbent Sean Duffy yesterday and independent challenger Ken Dreesen on Tuesday. Find these interviews and more information over at wisconsinvote.org. Food Friday is coming up here on Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, citizens in Door County are pushing for the establishment of a national park on islands belonging to Wisconsin and Michigan. We'll find out more during our check-in on news stories from around the state. First, it's time for Food Friday. Okay, we get it. We're all busy people. But cooking a delicious and beautiful meal doesn't always have to mean hours and hours in the kitchen. With the right ingredients and techniques and a little preparation, you might just be able to whip up a gourmet-style meal a lot faster than you think. And Dory Greenspan is here to help. Dory is a New York Times Magazine food columnist and James Beard Award-winning cookbook author. Her latest cookbook is Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. She'll be at Boswell Books in Milwaukee on Saturday, November 3rd. Dory, welcome back to Central Time.
So good to be back with you. Thank you.
Well, this book is stuff you make, you know, around the house for friends and whatever, and that made me wonder. You've made a recipe or two in your time. What is it that makes a recipe stand out to you, Dory, that you want to make it at home? It's part of your day-to-day repertoire.
Well, it has to be simple. I'm a practical cook, so it has to be practical. It can't be high, you know, like really heavy on technique, because I don't have great technique. And it has to be delicious. It has to be, I like when a recipe has a little surprise in it. So I'm always adding something unexpected to a dish. It doesn't take any more effort to make something delicious and surprising and kind of munchable. Like you take one spoonful and you want to take another. So that's kind of it. You know, simple, practical, delicious. Those are the three things I look for.
And one thing that I love in the cookbook, for a lot of the recipes, you've got a little sidebar called play around. So, okay, here's the basic recipe. Now, here's the thing you can do different, or if you don't have the right ingredient or whatever. Why is play important for you in the kitchen?
Look, a girl's got to have fun. You know, when you're making dinner every night, I think it's really important to enjoy every bit of the process, that the preparation should be as enjoyable as the serving it and sharing it with family and friends. But my little playing around boxes are, again, my sense of being practical. I've been living the past 8 years, I've been spending most of my time in an area where it's not so easy to get to a supermarket. And so often I'll want to make something, open the fridge and find I don't, or the pantry and find I don't have the ingredient. And so I find substitutions for it, or I find ways to make, if I've made a recipe I love, find a way to just vary it a little. And so I like to give home cooks those suggestions so that you're not bound to the recipe. You should follow the basic instructions, but you can make it so that it'll be what you and your family want to eat, or it'll take into account what you do and do not have. I want everybody in the kitchen cooking, so I'm trying to make it as easy as possible to make delicious food. I feel like that's my mission in life.
And another thing you do on a lot of your recipes here that I love is, you know, I get home from work, I want to turn around a meal pretty quick, or people come home from whatever, church, you want to get that brunch going fast. You've got a lot of advice on, okay, here are the steps in this recipe you can do the morning before or the day before. Talk about why that has helped you as a cook and could help us too.
Well, it's, you know, you feel like a master of the universe when you can just pull things together without much effort. And planning ahead is one way to do it. It's the most important. It's the easiest way to do it, I think. So every time a recipe can be made ahead, I let you know. I mean, one of my favorite recipes is the oven-charred tomato stuffed peppers. And I love them because they're beautiful. I love them because they're delicious. I love them because you can make the peppers ahead, keep them in the fridge, roast them when you have time, and you can serve the dish either hot, warm, or at room temperature. And I think when you can make something ahead and when you can serve it at room temperature, when it's as delicious at room temperature as it is when it comes just out of the oven, I think that's a real boon for all of us who are busy.
Talking to Dori Greenspan. Her new cookbook is Everyday Dori, The Way I Cook. She's with us for this edition of Food Friday. You shared a few recipes with us, Dori. We have them online, by the way, at WPR.org/Food Friday. This is a nice comforting sounding food for the fall. Maple syrup and mustard Brussels sprouts. Now, Dori, if somebody said, Rob, put together three flavors. These are not the three things I probably would come up with, but this, you say, works?
Why do you sound so doubtful?
Well, I don't know. Yeah. I don't know.
Yes, it works.
It's like a recipe Mad Lib, if you ask me. But I want to hear more about it.
Well, actually, recipe Mad Lib, now that's a good way of cooking. So Brussels sprouts are, you know, as we get into the colder weather, we're really depending on root vegetables and vegetables like Brussels sprouts, mm-hmm. and looking for ways to make them more interesting. So the mustard really adds pop. I mean, Brussels sprouts are really earthy, so the mustard kind of breathes them up a little bit and gives them some pizzazz. Bacon is a traditional great go with Brussels sprouts. And the maple syrup just rounds everything out, makes it just a little sweet against the garlic and the shallots. Cider vinegar, optional, but cider vinegar is a great last-minute addition to so many dishes, like lemon juice. Something to just take, add a little zing to a dish that's really comforting.
It's funny you say that, because lately, just in the last year or so, I think probably inspired by somebody on Food Friday, when I have that food, a soup or whatever, that I think, oh, this needs that little extra something right at the end, some kind of vinegar or lemon is what really puts it over the top. Is that something you do a lot at the tail end?
Absolutely. So a little bit of lemon juice, some lemon zest. I mean, if I never want to be without a lemon. I never want to be without salt. I never want to be without mustard. Those are three things that will really pick a dish up. And when you put them in at the end, when they're not cooked into the dish, that's when you get their full flavor. And that's when it adds just that extra bit that brings the dish up and makes people take notice.
Again, we have that maple syrup and mustard Brussels sprouts over at WPR.org/Food Friday if you're intrigued. I'm one over. I think I'll give that a try. One recipe that I saw in the book, Dory, we don't have this one up, but I had to ask about it. I love winter squash. I've got a lot sitting around now. I love just cooking it out down and having it for whatever. You've got a winter squash hummus. You make a hummus out of squash. Tell us about that.
So you get, I mean, who doesn't love hummus? But we're kind of used to it now. And I thought, wouldn't it be fun if it felt more like fall and winter rather than just a little snack? And so roasting the squash, gives you another layer of flavor in the hummus. And I also added some za'atar, which is an Israeli spice. You can add some dried oregano and dried thyme. Again, lemon juice, because tahini and squash, they're kind of flat flavors, delicious, but they need, again, that lift. And I added some yogurt to make it a lighter, brighter, tangier dish.
Now, is this something we're going to eat and we're going to think, oh, this is just normal hummus? Oh, surprise, there's squash in it? Or no, does it really have a characteristic, different flavor? This is a squashy-tasting hummus.
This is a squashy-tasting hummus.
But the
traditionalists will probably be at my door saying, you called that hummus? You're not allowed to do that. But it will have that mix and that element of surprise and a beautiful color.
And you don't lie awake at night, Dory, if I'm reading you right, worrying about what traditionalists will say about any kind of food. Am I right?
I don't. I mean, unless I'm really trying to make, a perfect French cassoulet as it is made in the southwestern part of France. I cook. I actually lie awake thinking about new recipes, but I don't worry about being traditional. I worry about making food that people will want to make at home, that they'll love sharing, and that will be delicious. That's what keeps me up at night.
It's Food Friday, and food writer Dory Greenspan is with us to share some simple, elegant meals. Her new cookbook is Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. She's sharing some recipes that she likes to make for friends and family when they're over. This is day-to-day cooking stuff, and we want to hear from you at 800-642-1234. Do you have a go-to recipe or two when you're having friends or family over? Do you have that one thing that you think is actually pretty easy to make, but it blows people away? They love it. They think you put hours and hours in the kitchen. Or do you have a question for Dory about how to cook something or maybe an inspiration for something to make this weekend? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or tweet us at Central Time WPR. More recipes coming up on Food Friday here on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Dory Greenspan is with us for this week's edition of Food Friday. She's a New York Times Magazine food columnist and a James Beard Award-winning cookbook author. Her latest cookbook is Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have that favorite go-to impress somebody meal that is actually easier than it looks? Or do you have a question for Dory about how to make that kind of meal? And have you gotten a recipe from Dory's work, or her past cookbooks, or her column that you've gone to maybe again and again? Now's the time to give her a call and let her know. Call in 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Dory, I want to get to another recipe, and you've got a great kind of one-pan recipe, a sheet pan supper recipe, balsamic chicken with baby potatoes and mushrooms. Talk us through this one.
So sheet pan suppers are very popular, and for good reason. You just put the sheet pan in the oven, pull it out, serve dinner. And so this is chicken with potatoes. I use small potatoes, and I just have them if they're large. Some mushrooms, some onion, some fresh herbs, and balsamic vinegar and olive oil. And so the chicken, everything comes out at the same time, of course. Browned, juicy, lots of flavor because the balsamic, which is slightly sweet, when it roasts in the oven, it gets that another flavor. It's sweet, but it also has just a little edge to it, which I really love with the chicken. Again, it's a dish that takes no effort, and yet, well, I mean, you have to work to put the chicken in the oven, but it's a really easy dish that comes out looking beautiful.
And you make go ahead.
I'm sorry. No, I say I'm not a decorator. I don't decorate my cakes with a lot of stuff. I don't decorate my food platters with a lot of extra ingredients. I really like when the food itself is beautiful and inviting. And that's what you'll get with this dish.
Let's go to our callers now. We've got Randy on the line in Madison. Randy, hi.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what did you want to ask about, Randy?
So one of the things my family really enjoys is pasta, and they particularly enjoy when I do homemade pasta. I haven't figured out a great way to make a large batch and store it so that it keeps well for use later in the week. Wondering if there's advice about that.
Okay. And Dory, I love homemade pasta when other people make it. It's a bridge I haven't crossed yet. Do you have any advice on larger batches and storage?
No, I don't, because like you, I ooh and ah when someone makes pasta for me, but I don't always do it. I rarely actually do it for myself. But Randy, I wonder, I mean, when you make your pasta, do you cook it right after it's been made? You could dry it.
Yeah, normally I do. Yeah, normally I whip it up, roll it out, and it's in the pot, you know, within 30 minutes later is normally how I do it.
Yeah, of course, because that's the joy of freshly made pasta. But you might not, you know, if you dry it, you won't get, of course you won't get the same texture, but you will get the same joy being able to say, I made this by hand. I don't have a good answer for you. I'm sorry.
All right. Good luck, Randy. And you can make some and bring it over here to the studio next time. And Dory, we had another caller who couldn't stay on the line. They want to expand their palate to include cooking with lamb. What's a good, straightforward, hard-to-mess-up way to cook lamb?
So I actually have a recipe that I love. I love when you say way not to, you know, not to mess it up.
Sorry, that's I'm inserting my own editorial because that's what I would worry about there.
Well, I have a dish that you don't have to worry about. I mean, a lamb roast, of course, is, well, it's, actually, I don't think it's all that easy. It's easy to overcook. I have a recipe for a rolled leg of lamb that I think is great, but my easiest lamb recipe, and this is one I really love, is lamb shanks cooked with tomatoes, canned tomatoes, white wine, chicken broth, some olives, some tangerine zest. And so it's just a simple braise. You just brown the lamb shanks and you cook them slowly in this mixture. If you have any left, I mean, I love this. I also use the same tomato, olive, tangerine mix for osso buco or for lamb shanks that have been cut like osso buco. It's delicious when you make it. If you shred the leftovers, this leftover lamb and the sauce are fabulous over pasta. Maybe we could get Randy to make the pasta,
yeah,
and I'll make the sauce, right?
Sounds great. And how do I make sure I don't overcook that lamb, though?
There's no way you can overcook it. It's a braise.
Okay.
The more you cook it, the better it will get.
That sounds fantastic.
It'll be soft, yeah. It'll be soft, tender, falling off the bone soft. You cannot overcook it. It's the perfect lamb dish if you're concerned about how best to cook lamb.
We're talking to Dory Greenspan. Her new cookbook is Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. Dory, some people give a lot of rules in their cookbooks. You don't. I found exactly one rule in your cookbook, and that is a meal has to include dessert.
That's my golden rule. That's the rule I insist on. Yes. So I like to give people freedom in the kitchen, and then I become you know, a disciplinarian, you must eat your dessert.
And you shared one. We've got one, a third recipe now at WPR.org/Food Friday. This sounds interesting. Chocolate-covered chai tea bars. Tell us about this.
Oh, so this is such a nice recipe. The chai and the bar itself, the not really cookie, it's cake bar, has tangerine or orange. It has honey. It has chai tea. It has cinnamon and ginger, so it has the flavors that are in the bar enhance the flavor that you get from chai tea. And you make the bar, you just, you know, mix the batter, bake it. It's super, super simple. And it comes out, it's very thin, it's a very slender bar. And then you milk chocolate. That's optional, but so good. And just swish it, swirl it, smooth it over the bars. Again, this is the kind of dessert or the kind of food that I love because it looks like a thin brownie, and then you taste it and you say, what is in this? I love it, but it's kind of mysterious. Actually, it's kind of haunted. You can't quite put your finger on it. You just know you like it, and you haven't tasted it before.
A good haunting recipe for Halloween. Let's go back to our callers now. Marty is with us in Douglas County. Marty, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. Say, I have a quick suggestion for the guy who's looking how to store freshly made pasta. A friend of mine used to date a guy whose parents were Italian, and you'd go to their house on Sunday and walk through the living room, and all of the furniture backs would be draped with pasta. There'd be, you know, over the couch, over the chair. So try draping it over an easy chair to dry it out. Maybe that'll work. Dory, I'm sick and tired of kale. I've had it with kale, but for some reason I just bought a big bunch of organic red kale today. Please give me something new and interesting to do with this boring old vegetable.
Bring back her love of kale, Dory.
Okay, so I think what you should make, I'm sorry, I'm just like, is this tomato tart that I really love. I make my own crust, but you could use a store-bought crust if you wanted to. And so in the crust is you have tomatoes. They can be grape tomatoes or cherry tomatoes, which even out of season taste good. There's ricotta cheese. There's a mixture of egg and cream. There's a bunch of grainy French mustard, and there's enough kale for you to use, you know, enough of what you bought to make you feel that you made a good purchase.
All right, Marty, I hope that gives you some inspiration. In our last couple of minutes, Dory, you mentioned in that, you know, that tart, you can use the store-bought pie crust. And I'll say sometimes when I take that kind of shortcut, you know, getting the pre-made crust or whatever, I feel a little guilty. Like, if I'm doing this, I'm not really cooking. Can you absolve me from my guilt?
It's so funny. I was just going to say, I was going to raise my hand. My hands were already up as you were speaking and say, I absolve you. You know, I started out by saying that you should try and find pleasure in the kitchen, that you should try and make being in the kitchen fun. What's really important about cooking is the fact that you're doing it, that you're making something with your hands, that you're sharing it with people, that you've got friends and family around the table, and you're providing a way for them to be together and enjoy one another. That's more important than whether you made the crust by yourself or you bought it at the supermarket.
And Dory, do you have a highlight of what you're going to be cooking this weekend?
So this weekend, I am going to make, because I have a million things to do this weekend, I'm going to make a really quick and delicious, dinner. I'm going to make sweet chili chicken thighs. Mm. So it's chicken thighs that are made with Thai sweet chili sauce. And so you get all of the flavor from a bottle. You don't need to do any work.
Love it. Dory, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me back again.
That's Dory Greenspan, New York Times Magazine food columnist and James Beard Award-winning cookbook author. Her latest cookbook is Everyday Dory, The Way I Cook. She'll be at Boswell Books in Milwaukee on November 3rd. And we've got three of her recipes from that cookbook available for you to make this weekend if you want to. Here's the recipes. There's the sheet pan balsamic chicken, the maple syrup and mustard Brussels sprouts, and the chocolate-covered chai tea bars. All kind of pronunciation challenges, but I got through them all okay. You can find those recipes and make them at home. They're over at WPR.org/Food Friday. Let us know how it went over the weekend. One of the world's most sophisticated telescopes may be back in operation soon thanks to some basic fix-it techniques that aren't really all that basic, it turns out. The Hubble Space Telescope has been capturing amazing images of the universe and answering lots of questions about space and raising new questions since it was launched in 1990. It's been up there, so if I'm doing my math right, 28 years with only a few service calls. That's pretty impressive. But the Hubble Telescope, or as my kids used to call it, the Hubble Bubble Telescubble, had a problem earlier this month, according to a series of press releases from NASA. NASA put the telescope into safe mode, like your computer, after a problem with the gyro, and that's a part that helps point the telescope in the right direction. So what do you do for a problem like this? Go to the TV show The IT Crowd.
Hello, IT. Have you tried turning it off and on again?
Well, NASA did try turning the part on and off and on again, and it didn't work. The next step, they wiggled it around a little bit, and it looks like that did the trick. Now, wiggling it around a bit is how I fixed a noisy bathroom fan. There wasn't a lot of science to that, but NASA says this wasn't quite that simple. The wiggling was actually a carefully planned and programmed series of maneuvers which turned the satellite back and forth. The goal, knock loose any obstructions that might have been causing the problem. And it's looking good. NASA says it's close to firing it up at full strength again. And I'm hoping that NASA has the budget to come and look at my bathroom fan if it starts making noise again. This is Central Time here on the Ideas Network.